The Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me in your inheritance." So he divided his property between them. And a few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered all of his property in dissolute, wild living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country. And he began to be in need. So he went and he hired himself to one of the citizens of that country who sent him out to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and enough to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I know, I'll get up and I'll go to my father. And I'll say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" And so he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me," but quickly, very quickly, the father said to his servants, "Go, get a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now, his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked, "What's going on?" And the servant replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back, safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out to him and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen. For all these years, I've worked like a servant for you, and I've never disobeyed your command, yet you wouldn't even give me a young goat so I could go and celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, and who has devoured your property with prostitutes and whatnot, you killed the fatted calf for him." But then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord. You may be seated. Family stories can be a bit of a messy thing, can't they? In all the different places I spoke with people this week about this story, so many people turn to their own families. Stories of children caught in the cycle of substance abuse. Stories of parents rejecting their kids because of who they were, or what they stood for, or who they loved. Stories of resentful siblings unable to empathize with their family's pains any longer. Family stories can be a messy thing. And Jesus' parable here is not without complication itself. This family also has quite a few strained relationships all around. One brother who doesn't understand how it's all so simple, how dad could just let the kid brother in after all that's happened, and then to celebrate of all things. And then the other one who did spoil quite a bit of money and just shows up out of nowhere. And then a father who was trying to reconcile the two sons together and have everyone celebrate together. There's stress all throughout this family, just like in our own families. Our opening verses give us the context for the story that Jesus is telling, how this family is maybe not exactly like our own immediate siblings and parents and whatnot, but is directed to this broader family of faith. There are the Pharisees, obsessed with how Jesus is talking and eating with the sinners of all people, because they had always done the right things. They've done the equivalent of, you know, showing up to church every Sunday, saying the right prayers, doing as much as they could, all in good faith. And it is the sinners, those who had never been to church or prayed the right prayer, or who have, maybe in our imagination and in the imagination of the Pharisees, done nothing but take all that they have and squandered it in some selfish way. This is who Jesus decides to sit with and talk with and bless and pray over. This is who Jesus extends the reconciliation of God. And because of that, this grace is simply complicated. It's simply complicated. And so our story of this complicated but still gracious family not only demonstrates this, how it's so complicated and yet so simple at the same time, but it also shows us where to go once this story is done being told. Historically, this story has been called the parable of the prodigal son. And instead of going all the way to verse 32 like we did today and making it a little bit longer of a reading, it was stopped halfway through, right after the son's party begins. But all three players, all three characters are important, because each of them gives a different angle as to how to understand or to live into grace. And so how do our three characters understand and experience the notion of grace, our rebellious, our resentful, and our reconciling character? And so first is our younger son, the rebellious child, the wild child. They experience grace in this dramatic fashion, an Oscar-worthy screenplay of a troubled kid roughing it on their own, only to be welcomed by the father. You can just see the emotions streaming everywhere. And notice, too, that little three-part speech that the son practices to himself before heading home. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. But when the father comes out to greet him and hold him and embrace him, the son begins, Father, I have sinned. But he only gets past the first two parts. The father seemingly cuts him off, that this lost, now found son, before he can even get to say, treat me like one of your hired hands, because the father won't even hear this plea. He is restored before anything else. There's a celebration to be had, of course. And so to this rebellious child, grace is a gift. But after the rebellious boy is the elder son, our resentful child. They experience grace as a subtle intrusion, an invasion of resources, an overwhelming and overthrowing of expectations. Again, this is also quite dramatic, but not in the big cinematic way, but more so in the petty older sibling just waiting out in the outside the party to be greeted and talked to and consoled, because they've kept track. They've calculated the family's finances enough to keep them afloat, never dipping into the funds for themselves. And then along comes the rebellious child. And now there are net deficits, and they can only see the waste and the harm to the resentful son. Grace is an undeserved waste of resources. Grace is something to be earned. But then finally comes our reconciling beloved father. They experience grace as an infinite resource, something extended not only to the rebellious son by running out to meet them there where they're at, but grace is also extended to our elder son in greeting the resentful one and meeting them where they're at, out in the field, outside the party, outside the celebration, choosing to go and plead with them to come and join, to celebrate with everyone else, because celebrating reconciliation is never a waste to the Father. This is why it's important for all three characters, for all three parts of this story to show up, because this is not just the story of the prodigal son. It's the story of the two lost sons and the father that goes out to meet both of them so that they can all together celebrate and feast and find joy. Just as the rebellious son understood grace as a gift, to the father, grace is something to be shared. And so, again, to the rebellious child, grace is a gift. To the resentful child, grace is something to be earned. But to our reconciling father, grace is something to be shared. But reconciliation, this thing that the father's after, can be a bit of a loaded term. Does it mean we just all agree to disagree and celebrate together nonetheless? Does it mean that after one person has wronged another, that a vengeful justice has to be enacted, that the other person pays the price so we can move forward? How do we calculate this? Really, the core question is the elder, resentful child right or wrong to be upset? Or is the father right or wrong for letting the younger son back in? Again, family stories can be a messy thing. But the vision of reconciliation that Jesus paints for us this morning is not focused on the right or the wrong, or doing the math and calculating who has to pay what. The resentful older brother's frustration comes from keeping track of all the misdeeds, tallying up all the costs of everything. He enters our story today perplexed by the fact that this father did not make the younger one pay up. But it's good for us to note that reconciliation and accountability are not two different things competing against one another. Part of the work of reconciliation is indeed being honest with our feelings and our responses and the wrongs of others. Jesus carves out a character for us this morning in this parable so that we can be honest with, frankly, how ridiculous this father is to let this child in yet again. But in terms of who God celebrates, who God welcomes into their table, into their house, who God makes room for, that is not something we really get to control or keep track of. And so Jesus warns us of this mentality. What the Father establishes is that the way of the household is not debt and repayment, but a reconciliation, a restoration of the once wayward person. One author noted that if we choose to enter the celebration, we accept grace as the rule in the Father's house. And likewise, we would also accept the ministry of reconciliation that Paul speaks of in our first reading. Paul writes that God is not counting their trespasses against them, but entrusting the message of reconciliation to us. It doesn't seem that we're sent out with this message of reconciliation into the world, this message of grace, to be scorekeepers, to gatekeep, to settle for nothing less than perfection and getting it right and obedience. This is how the Pharisees of Jesus' day, the older brother, saw those who were reconciled to God. And in some ways, we do the same today. We can find ourselves attempting to figure out who it is that God invites to God's celebration. Do we want order and obedience at all costs and punitive, rigid justice for when it isn't met? Or do we long for celebration, to join with the Father and restore the wrongdoers of the world back to the table of God, giving them clothes for their bodies, sandals for their feet, and food for the empty belly, just as for the younger son? So to the rebellious child, grace is a gift. To the resentful child, grace is something to be earned. But to the reconciling Father, our Father, grace is something to be shared. And so our final question is, where do you find yourself in this story? Again, it's important that all three characters are here. All three imaginations around grace are part of this story, or part of our story, so that we can enter into them. Jesus, in telling this parable, invites us in. And notice how this parable concludes. The father goes out, meets the elder son out in the field, the resentful child makes his case of how unfair this all is, and then the father closes us out. Son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead
and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found. The end. It's a bit of a cliffhanger. Does the elder son go inside? And the same question comes to us. Do we go in? Do we celebrate? Do we accept grace as the rule of the Father's house? We're invited to take on the imagination of all three, seeing through all three lenses, through all three characters' eyes. So as we close our time, let's visualize each of them. Take a moment and imagine the rebellious. Think of the eras of your life, the times of your life where you were far from the house of grace, times you were at the end of your rope, desperate for anyone to take a chance on you. Imagine the nervousness, the fear, as he approaches the once familiar road home, unsure of how this plea for help will go over, because he doesn't deserve anything in his mind. But then suddenly, as if out of nowhere, you're embraced, you're treated with more grace than you know what to do with, and are celebrated. You're home, safe and sound. In Lent, as we've noted before, we remember and confess our lost ways, but we also recall God's embrace of us, God's forgiveness of us nonetheless. And so even today, we can reflect on the ongoing ways we can better emulate God's message of reconciliation, knowing that we're invited to the table and asking, do we go in? Knowing that we too are also the wayward, rebellious child every now and then. But now we imagine the resentful. Think of times where you were stuck at home, where you've done the good work and still don't feel like you're good enough or you've done enough. And in the midst of this struggle of trying to figure out if you've been up to par, you feel the anger bubble inside of you. Your shoulders grow tense, your hand move into a fist at the thought of this house of grace welcoming someone without going throughout all these trials you've endured, having paid no price at all, earning nothing. Imagine then God reminding you how grace is infinite and endless, how God also meets you and has enough goodness for you, and you've made it, that your labor for the kingdom of God is not unappreciated, but it's also not your ticket inside to the celebration. Feel your anger subside, your shoulders shrink down, and your fist unclench. And in this moment, do you go inside? Do you reconcile with those who you don't expect God to be gracious to? In this house of grace, do you welcome the criminal? Do you welcome a gay, lesbian, or trans sibling attempting to celebrate in the Father's house? Do you welcome the person of color, the youth, imagining for just a moment, do you celebrate like the reconciling Father, asking not for conformity into the ways we want to run the house, but accepting them, greeting them, welcoming and loving them in all of who they are? These are the questions that Jesus leaves us with, ones that have no easy answer, because grace is simply complicated. Grace is simply complicated. But we still engage within our spiritual faith families. It's a messy endeavor that Jesus invites us into. And this parable aids us in the journey after this story is told, after we leave this place this morning, this Sunday, and go into the rest of our lives, that we might respond to God's invitation to celebrate with all the rebellious, wayward people, to celebrate at the table with those reconciled to God. And so as we go forth, in the character of the rebellious, may we find our own way to return to God's ways of reconciliation and see grace as a gift given to us freely. In the character of the resentful, we find that we will likely find resentment on the way to the Father's house. And so in this image of this resentful older child, we also find ourselves in the story and find that grace has always been there for us to access. Grace is more than an undeserved waste of resources. Grace is not earned. It is a gift we receive with more than enough to go around. And in the character of our beloved, reconciling Father, we find a way to celebrate with all people. We get to join in singing and dancing and freedom and goodness, a feast at God's expansive table, with grace as the rule of this house, as something meant to be shared. Meant to be shared only if we choose to join the celebration. And so may we return like the rebellious, reconcile like the Father, and may we enter the house and celebrate with all people. Amen.